Hello there. Welcome to another episode of Architects of Change, brought to you by Mambu, the cloud banking platform to help you evolve your business. I'm your host, Nina Mohanty, founder of Bloom Money. Today, we're discussing next level banking and how we digitally transform legacy core banking technology to become more efficient. This is our first regional episode of the series, and I'm super excited for it because we're traveling to Southeast Asia, where we will be discussing the topic with reference to a new APAC-commissioned IDC white paper themed Leveraging Digital Core Banking Systems, Next Level Banking. This new research highlights benefits of a multi-core approach for Southeast Asian banks seeking rapid, low-risk digital transformation. And throughout the episode, we'll be using this as a basis to explore how we can efficiently move forward whilst limiting risk. I'm delighted to say that joining me today to help explore this topic is Harry Sipe, a partner at McKinsey & Co.'s Bangkok office, who leads the firm's digital and analytics work in Thailand. We're also joined by Abhi Chakravarti, regional director of Mambu's advisory and strategy team at APAC. Welcome to you both. Harry, welcome. Let's start by outlining the current digital banking landscape in Southeast Asia. We've got to ask the question, is the region lagging behind other parts of Asia or other regions globally?
To get right to it, I don't think so at all. I think that Southeast Asia and being in part of bigger Asia is actually at the forefront of many of the digital innovations that are happening across the globe. And I would say that while maybe as a full industry, you could still find very archaic business models and then banking and maybe very branch-oriented business models, we also have the future of banking right here in our countries, be it Thailand, Indonesia, Singapore, and the other Southeast Asian countries, right? And I think a couple of things that drive that is our proximity to Asia and also the innovation of the consumer class here. Because if you look at here in Bangkok, in the BTS, the SkyTrain, you'll see that everybody has a mobile phone and everybody is playing on it and using it as a digital native.
Absolutely. I think that's a really interesting point there that you said about kind of having that access to digital right there in our hands. And in some ways, it often feels that Southeast Asia is even, dare I say, leapfrogging the rest of us. Abhi, why is it that the banks that are falling behind in digital transformation feel to be a bit reluctant to change? Is there any benefit right now that they have to sticking with legacy core banking? Or can banks just continue operating with their legacy core? What's going on here?
I think we first need to accept that there's a historical challenge here. Large-scale technology transformations in the past have been seen as CIO killers, right? With challenges ranging from difficulty in articulating value to complex system integrator relationships to internal talent issues. So it comes with itself a broad range of issues, right? However, I think at some level, all banks are now thinking about how to make change happen. I think the difference lies in the aspiration as well as the broader 4 to 5 year goals that some of these organizations might have. And really, to the second part of your question, right, is there a benefit sticking to legacy core banking technology? I think I'd be the first to admit that there's certainly value in legacy core banking technology. Significant investments have been made by organizations to set up, run, customize these systems. However, as new technologies are becoming mainstream, cloud is becoming ubiquitous, it is really just a matter of time that every bank, every financial services player will have to think about next generation core, or they risk themselves being overtaken by competitors.
Now, that was interesting that you mentioned that in terms of appetite and forward thinking. So Harry, you know, there is this perhaps misconception you've already debunked. So are Southeast Asian banks actually more risk averse to digital change than other parts of the world? Or is that actually a fallacy? And I wonder if you can help us out by giving us some examples of the Southeast Asian success stories. What are the banks that are dominating the digital scene? And who's doing it well? Who can we give a gold star to over in Southeast Asia?
I think that banks in Southeast Asia are experimenting a lot, right? So I would not say that they are risk averse. And I think in every market, you can find multiple banks that are trying, some of them that are having early traction. I think it's too early to say that there's one single winner or giving out gold stars, but I would definitely give gold stars for the innovations that I see. If I look only here in Thailand, right, like Kasikorn Bank has been very active in finding out new business models that are digitally enabled, be it by partnering with Grab, which is a large ride-hailing company here, or with Lime, which is our biggest messenger or WeChat equivalent that is very popular among the locals. But also, if you look at Indonesia, what's exciting to see is that a lot of incumbent banks like BRI have partnered with Alipay to provide point of sale acceptance of mobile payments for Chinese tourists, right? Which is very, I would say, at the avant-garde of digital innovation in banking.
I'm really glad you gave those examples there, Harry, especially about Grab, about Alipay. I'll even throw in Line Pay, for example. There's a lot of contextual bits and pieces within the ecosystem that we often forget about depending on where in the world we're sitting. And all of this kind of does trickle down to local culture or maybe perhaps corporate culture. So Abhi, within APAC more broadly, but also the Southeast Asian region, do you think that culture plays a role in the confidence that banks are having in digital transformation? Or have certain countries been persuaded one way or another due to culture?
Culture, I think, continues to play a role in how financial institutions approach digital transformations, right? Different markets in APAC and Southeast Asia are evolving at different rates. Regional similarities do exist, and Harry talked a little bit about them. But the local nuances are certainly very important, right? Especially when you think about the broader macroeconomic factors. I think what tends to happen is these macroeconomic factors tend to almost define which countries are moving a little faster, while some are, say, one step behind, while some are playing catch up. But at a broad level, I think to answer your question, I don't think there is a fundamental risk-averse nature that exists in Southeast Asia or that exists in these countries. I think the cultural differences are more attuned to how to approach these transformations. In some countries, you'll see there's a lot of digital speedboats being launched, right? Vietnam is a great example where there's a lot of these digital speedboats being launched. While some countries tend to take a more traditional rip and replace approach, right? I can imagine, in Indonesia, for example, or even Singapore, there might be a tendency to kind of think a little bit in that manner. But again, it's hard to generalize. It's really become different banks and kind of, I would almost say, the culture of the financial institution more than the culture of the country that they sit in are actually driving these decisions more than kind of which country they belong to.
Well, I can assure you where I sit in London, we've got a cultural reluctance as well in this part of the world. But thank you for outlining that. And I love that, the digital speedboats.
Maybe to add one thing, Nina, on what Abhishek is saying, which is 32, is that I think you do see that every country is different in Southeast Asia. And I think it's less culture. It's also the context of the financial industry. There are some where you have hundreds of banks, literally, and some where the top four are 80% of all banking revenue, right? And also the regulator plays a big role that we see in how risk-averse or risk-forward banks are.
Absolutely. So I want to start from the very beginning, and I think we need to lay down some foundations. So let's outline the facts when it comes to digital transformation. What do we actually mean when we talk about digital transformation? And why exactly do banks and customers need it? And I'm going to widen this. I don't want to just talk about retail banking, but perhaps also business banking. Why does it matter? Why does digital transformation matter in Southeast Asia?
For me, look, every bank are either moving or beginning to move on digital in a big way, right? But the questions around what to do and how to do it remain. And that is really the definition for me of digital transformation. It's really a culmination of actions that banks and financial institutions are doing to make themselves more customer first to find ways to use technology to drive top line and bottom line impact, to drive structural cost efficiencies, to set up initiatives which drive value to shareholders and to the consumers of those banks. So when you really talk about digital transformation, then it can feel like it means so many different things, but it really almost boils down to the what and the how of how to become more customer-centric and how to drive immediate value for my organization. Like, that is how I would really encompass digital transformation.
Now, I'm glad that you said that, Abhi, about being customer-centric, because I think I want to zoom in on that. Forgive me, I am a product lover at heart, and so I'm always thinking about the end customer and the jobs to be done. So, Harry, I wonder, can you outline for us, what are the benefits for customers? Maybe we'll start there, and then we'll think about the banks and what the benefits for the banks are. What are the benefits for customers?
I think this is as much benefits for customers as requirements that customers have that mm-hmm. banks need to adapt to. Because it is a fact that if you wake up in Thailand, Indonesia, Singapore, or Philippines, right, you are now expected that you can press a button and a car appears, right? That you, if you're hungry, that you go on an app and you'll be fed. And a lot of services, a lot of entertainment, everything is becoming instant, real-time, pay-as-you-go. These innovations that consumer tech companies and product-driven companies in hardware and software have driven. So customers want that also from their financial institutions, right? And they don't want to go to a branch. They don't want to fill in very long forms with information that they already have. So that's kind of the gauntlet being thrown. And as CEOs of banks, this is both an opportunity as well as a threat, right? So the threat, of course, is if you don't move, maybe not today, because we are still a kind of regulated industry, but definitely down the road, there will be no place or no value that you can add to the customer, and they will vote with their feet. But it's also an opportunity. And we published a program on what are the five imperatives for CEOs of banks that really want to become digital is looking at, right? And number one is really starting with that customer part, reimagining what the value can be, what you can bring. If you would just imagine what we could do, given that we can be digital first. And then it's also a lot about building the engine, right? How do I attract talent that might go to a Google or a Meta or a Grab in there? How do I internalize these kind of rules to live by? Data first, technology as a core, or engineering as a core principle, right? Instead of in a basement somewhere with IT, and then really be more faster and build for speed. That's the fourth thing. And then the fifth one, what you said, it's not only consumers, it's also how do we create adoption in the enterprise, right? And with our enterprise customers, because it's not only the app in mobile consumers that drives value in the digital transformation.
I really like that you said that customers will vote with their feet. And I think we see that now today more than ever across the world, but definitely in Southeast Asia, where you've got banks that are starting to move forward and you've got these digital upstarts that have come up. So there's more options than ever. So there's options for customers. We've kind of touched on a few of these topics already. I'm going to lay them out for you both, and then we'll jump into it. The first we touched on was, you know, continue with legacy core. Everyone loves a bit of COBOL. The second could be to replace legacy core with digital core and think of that as a rip and replace model, right? Just take it out completely, chuck it out and replace it with something new. And then, of course, there's the last option, that which is lower risk and this faster multi-core approach, where you can maintain your legacy core for the really important functions, you know, the back office situations, and slowly replace with digital core over time. So I'm going to go ahead and go straight to you, Harry. You know, of the three options, can you tell us a little bit about how you're thinking about this?
I see it more as a continuum. So these are three options. There's probably a fourth and a fifth option in there. And for me, it would be really coming back to starting, what is the value that we're trying to capture, right? Because rip and replace sounds very sexy or easy and simple in a way. But there are, of course, realities in terms of costs that you've already invested, costs that you have to do to achieve that, and the real risks that are there. So if I was a CEO that really wanted to say, I'm an incumbent bank, I have a 20-year-old core, and this is the reality of many banks in Southeast Asia, what do I want to achieve? Do I want to create value by my existing customers? Because I feel that they need to have this new experience, right? So how do I build a new plane while flying the existing plane?
Yes.
And then you get more in, I would say, hollowing out the core, right? Trying to replace little bits with more modern pieces, specifically at the front end, trying to decouple some of the old clunky pieces and put them separate so that you can approach them one by one. And I make it sound much simpler than it actually is. But if I say, well, this set of customers, they are, for better or worse, content with the services we can bring them today, right? Because it's a certain segment or a certain expectation or lack of expectation. But I want to be relevant for maybe a younger generation that would never even consider my old bank. Then it might be better to just start a new company and build it from the ground up and let it grow up by itself, which has its own pros and cons, right? Imagine you have to feed both of these companies.
Yeah, and that latter half that you talked about, I've heard it referred to as kind of a greenfield project. Is that a fair kind of name that we can give it to, giving it its space to kind of grow or spin out on its own? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and greenfield is the term that they would use if there was nothing before, right? As opposed to brownfield is trying to update what you have.
Yes, absolutely. And we've kind of talked through that spectrum. Abhi, do you agree with Harry in terms of that being a spectrum or the different approaches that we can take here?
Yeah, and I certainly agree that it's important to start with why you want to do something, right? So having a very clear strategy in mind as to where you want to be, and then using that to then sort of decide what you want to do. And I also, I think, agree with Harry when he says that it's a spectrum and you don't necessarily have to pick one option. Like even especially if you're a large enough bank, you could possibly go down both option two and option three in a way that you could say that I do want to launch a greenfield venture where I can try a completely new digital core, but I also want to incrementally over time take a more steady approach to changing my existing core. The one thing that I do want to say, Nina, is that I actually feel that continuing with a legacy core is a stopgap measure. It's probably the least effective option in my opinion, because more and more consumers today, even some of those consumers that you've had for a while, are increasingly expecting speed, convenience, customization, seamless integration with other financial applications that they use, even the ones who have probably been with the same bank for 40 years. I think the expectation has risen, right? Over the last 5 years, what you expect from your bank has risen. And while it's not impossible, I think it is certainly challenging for banks to continue operating on a legacy core without sacrificing some parts, right? Either sacrificing the customer experience or potentially not sacrificing customer experience, but introducing a high amount of cost to actually continue operating on that core. You mentioned COBOL. Making one change on a 25-year-old core banking system on COBOL probably could take months, right? And the testing could take months. So while I think it is not something that you almost need to say, no, I need to change today, but I think it is important to have a roadmap for change, right? And that roadmap could be 5 years, right? That's fine. But as long as there is a roadmap and as long as you have a clear plan on how you're going to get rid of your technical debt, get the migration right, take a slow and steady approach, that's perfectly fine. And that in a way is a little bit the multi-core approach, right? Or at least in my opinion, that's one of the ways that you could approach that that problem.
And for context, you know, when we talk about COBOL and core infrastructure, we're talking about, you know, having to pull people out of retirement to have to go and be able to change those core systems. So I wanted to dig into what you said just then about multi-core systems. And I think this is a perfect time to just quickly discuss the headlines from the APAC-commissioned IDC white paper. And it's called Leveraging Digital Core Banking Systems, Next Level Banking. So do you feel, Harry, that this ties in with the general outlook that you're seeing across APAC more broadly?
I think this debate, right, what to do with our current legacy and what to do with the rising expectations and the opportunities out there is a debate I have weekly in boardrooms and with CTOs and CEOs. My view on it is that the white paper lays out quite well all the different options to choose from. I think what you need to lay over that, and Abhishek was also referring to that, right, is the why, where the value is coming from. And then you would see that really a multi-core setup is temporary at best, right? So it is a stopgap, and you create technical debt. And as long as you're very clear about that and can give that a value and can then make ultimately the kind of profit and loss assessment, then that can be a very good reason to keep with some legacy, right? And that might not be the nicest answer to consumers at time, but it might be the best answer from a total system picture. I think if you really are wanting to be a multi-core bank for a long time, I think then either you have multiple business models and it's more like a holding, or you're not being very clear around what technical debt you have and what tough choices you need to make. And that's a dangerous position to be.
I love that. So Harry is really challenging us all right now to look at ourselves in the mirror and ask ourselves, what exactly are we trying to do here? And Abhi, you've talked about the why often. So, you know, pulling from the paper, would you agree with Harry as well that we've kind of presented everyone with a few a la carte options, perhaps, to think through that you just touched on? Any other comments there?
Yeah, I actually agree with Harry that it's very easy to do the multi-core option badly. In fact, it's much harder to do it right than to do it badly. And what I mean by that is you could say, oh, let me take the risk-averse option. I'll run both. And you could almost put yourself in the position of having multiple business models, of not knowing where you want to invest the time, the effort, you know, senior leadership time. Is it to kind of start moving things over to this new core or to focus on, you know, reducing tech debt in your existing core? You could actually be in a whole gamut of issues, right? So what I always suggest CIOs, CTOs, CEOs to do is, one, you have to have a very good reason to do multi-core. Two, you have to have a very good plan to do it well. And three, you need to think about the user experience that you're providing to your customers and how can you actually, in some ways, use the multi-core approach to move your customers along the customer experience value chain, right? Maybe I'll share an example, right? So one example of thinking about multi-core could be where you, once your new core is set up, all the new products that you launch are all digital-first products. Like you launch them on the new digital core. And then you almost find a way to work with your customers to say that you could move some of the old legacy products that you have onto the new core by kind of switching over to the new digital products. And yes, that requires customer education. That requires you to spend time with customers. By the way, it requires you to be creative, right? This is a great design problem to solve, right? Like I can imagine design leaders in some of these financial institution really going like, okay, that's a tricky but interesting problem to solve. So finding ways to do this, and it's critical that you have the why I am doing this answer ready, because it is a question that executives are asked and they will continue to be asked if they go down the approach of multi-core. If they take the rip and replace approach, it comes with its own set of challenges, and migration is never easy. I have helped a bank migrate customers, and it is challenging is an understatement, right? And it does require, again, extreme planning. It does require thinking about multiple fail-safe options.
Yes, I think Big Bang sounds a lot better than in actual practice.
Exactly. And sometimes it can take you months to get it right. In fact, years if you want to get it right. Sometimes it takes longer to migrate. And by the time you finish the migration, what you've migrated on is already out of date. So it is really important to think about how you will do it. But it all starts with, just like Harry said, it all starts with the why. What are you trying to achieve? Why do you want to do something? And then you use that as the basis to make these decisions.
When I first moved to the UK, I learned a delightful phrase where people often say, all the gear, no idea. And it works better if you've got a British accent. But I think that is a useful phrase in this particular instance, because what we're talking about is the context of this digital transformation, right? You can have all the gear, you can have the top notch, top of the line, everything, but the context really, really matters. The why, the reason that you're doing it, why are you doing it for the business? Why are you doing it for your customers? Obviously matters just as much. So just to close out, Harry, I wanted to ask you before we go, what are your expectations for digital transformation across Southeast Asia for this year in 2022? And what are the trends that you're looking forward to watching?
It's a very exciting time. And as we're, you know, hopefully rounding out a corner that has been very tough for our lives and livelihoods, everybody is excited to how we build back better, right? I think number one, and that is coming back to, I think, my message of starting with the why and where the value is, I think a lot of the value is around ecosystems, right? So how do you reimagine what a bank or a financial services company can be, not only within the walls or within your network of branches, but really across company boundaries, right? And then how do you collaborate and how do you create value chains and deliver something to the customer in an ecosystem manner? I think will be continues to be the driving force of financial innovation and digital transformation in Thailand, in Indonesia, and Singapore, and in the whole of Southeast Asia. And secondly, of course, all banks need to look at where can we innovate, right? And I think traditionally, I think retail or consumer finance has been where a lot of the action has been, payments in Asia. I'm excited to see, maybe not in 2022, but in the next years, wealth management coming online, if you will, in digital. SME, I think there are a lot of opportunities there, and even in CIB, right, in the corporate banking. And then the third trends that I see is around the more the under the hood, the technology, the multi-core aspects that we were discussing. And I see really front-runner banks that have built this kind of data and technology-first mindset and talent base, frankly, being able to pull off much more impressive transformation by looking, for instance, how do I put data separate from even this whole notion of is there a core or not. Some banks are even, you know, kind of going against, should we have a core? Maybe it's not about being core, it's about a collection of microservices.
Or
how an Amazon would work in there to bypass it. And I think there's a lot of interesting elements happening there.
Wow, we've got a fourth option now, coreless. Oh my goodness. Avi, last but not least, what are you looking forward to when we think about digital transformation for the year ahead? What is exciting you? What are the trends that you are watching and what should our listeners be looking out for?
Nina, I think broadly I see three things, which is going to, I think, hit banks hard in 2022 and really are sort of what I call hot topics, right, on the minds of executive teams at in banks. So the first one is what Harry actually mentioned as the third one, which is transforming the backbone of the banks through technology, right? That is accelerating cloud banking, right? Moving to public cloud. How do we think about operating model transformation? Using AI across the full value chain, right? So everything to do with technology to really transform the backbone of these banks. Number two is innovation, right? I won't spend a lot of time on this, but this could mean anything from embedded finance to SME lending to digitization of personal financial management to how individual consumers like you and me think about investments. So all of these are really around innovation and products and services. And then I think the third one is really just preparing for disruptions, right? This could mean like this whole ESG challenge, which has really come up, right? Like everybody's talking about it. It is an extremely important topic.
Brilliant. Well, I have learned so much from both of you. Thank you both so much for joining us today. And I'm so thrilled to be able to have virtually joined you in Southeast Asia. Next time we'll have to come to Bangkok or Singapore and visit you in person to further discuss. Thank you for joining us today on Architects of Change.
Thank you, Nina. It was lovely to be here.
Thank you very much, Nina. It was a great pleasure.
My mind is absolutely racing after that conversation with Harry and Abhi. And I'm glad that we got to touch on legacy core banking and talk about the fact that it's not something that needs to necessarily happen overnight. You know, we discussed the different options that banks have on the table. And it is a bit like having an a la carte menu. There's different options that are sticking to legacy core. There's rip and replace models. And of course, the very, very a la mode style of multi-core approach. And I think the most important thing that we've learned is that it is a spectrum. And you can choose in between, and you can mix and match, and you can really make something wonderful off the back of that. We've heard from our conversation that there is evidence that multi-core approaches can actually work. So if you're a legacy core bank that's listening in, and you're contemplating evolving digitally, we hope this podcast episode has been useful. If you'd like to read the APAC-commissioned IDC white paper, Leveraging Digital Core Banking Systems, Next Level Banking in Full, please visit mambu.com/insights. I want to thank both of my guests today, Harry Sipe and Abhi Chakravarti. If you wish to follow more of Harry's work, please head to mckinsey.com/r-people/Harry-Sipe. And for more information on Abhi's work with Mambu and with the wider APAC region, please connect with him by going to mambu.com/insights. For more Mambu podcasts, head to wherever you get your podcasts. I've been your host, Nina Mohanty. See you next time.